Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Post Acute Point of View podcast, our discussion hub for healthcare technology in the out-of-hospital space. Here, we talk about the latest news and views on trends and innovations that can impact the way post-acute care providers work. We'll also dive into how technology can make a difference in today's changing healthcare landscape for home and facility-based workers and the people they care for. Let's dive in.
Welcome, everyone, to today's webinar, Navigating the Future of Health Data Exchange, Unlocking TEFCA and Enhancing Provider Interoperability. I'm Home Healthcare News Senior Editor Andrew Donlin. And now for our speakers. First, we have Chris Puglisi, the Director of Product Management at MatrixCare, Nick Knowlton, the Vice President of Business Development at ResMed, Angela Richards, the Director of Health Informatics at Andwell Health Partners, and finally, Paul Wilder, Executive Director of the Commonwealth Health Alliance. Chris, I'm going to pass things over to you, and I'll be back later.
Thank you so much, Andrew. Good afternoon, everyone. Really excited to be here. Just a quick agenda for today before we move into the panel. Give a quick intro, an overview of this part of healthcare and the unique challenges around interoperability in post-acute care. We'll spend some time on a policy spotlight of TEFCA. We'll explain that acronym here in a moment, and we'll get to our esteemed panelists at the end and for the majority of the call. So let's talk about some unique challenges for post-acute providers when it comes to interoperability. Post-acute care is different than some of the settings that maybe have advanced different interoperability initiatives further. Notably, patients often receive care for longer and continuous periods of time. There are usually multiple providers that have overlapping responsibility for one patient, and they're not all in one building like a hospital. They're spread out, not to mention all the general challenges with the chains of custody and the hospitalist and the primary care assuming responsibility for different parts of the patient's care. And then the ubiquitous reliance on referrals from acute and ambulatory settings. So unlike other settings of care where there's can be walk-ins, most post-acute providers rely exclusively on referrals from the acute and ambulatory settings. Given those key areas of focus that make the post-acute care industry different, we've got two key glaring problems to solve. First, inefficient care transitions, where information may be passed. It's often still passed by a fax. It may even be passed manually in terms of a physical piece of paper being brought somewhere by a family member. There's also a lot of manual coordination, which is our second area to solve as part of that transition and ultimately as part of the course of a given admission, depending on how many different providers may be involved in care delivery, which leads to a general large pot of labor that does not have any direct reimbursement related to it, but everyone must take care of that kind of coordination in order to deliver high quality care and deliver positive clinical outcomes. So the way MatrixCare approaches these kind of challenges at a high level is understanding that data exchange and technology supporting healthcare has been evolving in fits and spurts for the last 40 years. And while new technology is out there and rapidly innovating, there's older standards of getting things done that are far more widely deployed. That said, there's lots of new stuff out there, and not paying attention to the constant advancements in capability within healthcare in terms of technology adoption is of vital importance to any organization trying to keep track and support providers in the field. And lastly, stakeholder education. And this is one of those ones less to do with delivery of a given technology solution and more to deliver understanding and knowledge to the larger market and the participants inside of it. There's been a general knowledge gap for providers in this space for a whole variety of reasons. Notably, the biggest and most glaring is related to the amount of funding and incentive that was extended down during the early 2000s as hospital EHR certification took hold. A whole cottage system and industry of individuals trained in efficient management of health IT systems was built up to support those large hospital organizations, and not so much that same technology investment seen in the post-acute space. So let's think about how connected your organization might be in the face of these significant headwinds and challenges. The biggest challenge most of you face when it comes to building up a patient's health record is how you get all that information. in many cases, you've got seriously ill individuals. They've been in and out of different care settings many times over the recent months and weeks. And that can generate hundreds of pages of clinical documents, many of which are being faxed to you, or are in some form not easily brought into your system other than somebody scanning over that document, hoping to find the right diagnosis code or the right piece of information that'll help your teams deliver the best possible care. So access to that health information is valuable, but without efficient and meaningful ways to process it, which you would get if there was a more digital transaction, presents a massive opportunity to deliver efficiencies within your organization where better outcomes can be accomplished through the meaningful use of information. Post-acute providers and organizations that can embrace true interoperability increase their odds of successfully navigating the new value-based care economy. For those familiar, it was passed in 2016, and it contained provisions for a variety of things, including patient access. Significantly for today's discussion, it introduced a framework for nationwide health data exchange. This clause, this area of the legislation, is the Trusted Exchange Framework and Common Agreement, or TEFCA. TEFCA is the governing framework, and it created rules for how information could be exchanged and created entities certified to provide that kind of exchange to providers. Those entities are called Qualified Health Information Networks, or QHINs. Matrix Care's service provider is the Commonwealth Health Alliance and is an approved QHIN as of the beginning of this year. Other approved QHINs include the EHR, or Large Hospital EHR Epic, an organization called MedAllies, and Node2, all names that you may have seen or be familiar with. Now, how do these things legally function? There's a lot of information being exchanged, providers trying to coordinate efforts and share data with each other. And the great news is all these are covered under existing HIPAA rules. So patient information can be safely exchanged for the purposes of treatment, payment, operations, and now patient access, which, as noted, was added by the Cures Act. And within your EHR, any interaction with nationwide healthcare networks would generally fall under treatment use case, ideally also patient access to make sure that you're able to disclose patient information when it's requested by those approved actors. We are likely to see additional scenarios for payment or operations that could be more explicitly supported in the future under this piece of legislation. So why should you pay attention? Today, TEFCA has a growing number of incentives. A recent provision defined in HT1 allows exemptions for information blocking, including patient access, when both entities are participating in TEFCA. For those of you familiar with information blocking and patient access, this was another part of the Cures Act that was built to put some enforcement around the disclosure of information to a recognized entity like another healthcare provider trying to get information about a patient that they are providing care for. The wider reach of a program like TEFCA broadens the capacity of a single connection to achieve exponentially more. And just in the short time that it's been active since the beginning of this year, we've seen lots of organizations either actively embrace the program or indicate strongly that they will in the future. So it's being widely adopted even among more traditional organizations for exchanging information, more often at a statewide level, like a health information exchange. It's also strongly expected that the ONC will continue to expand rulemaking around TEFCA and that more incentives will be extended and more scenarios directed specifically for other covered entities like payers. With that intro, I'm going to bring on our very knowledgeable panelists to move into the panel discussion. We are going to start today with a question for Paul Wildler, who is the Executive Director of Commonwealth, a QHIN certified under TEFCA. So, Paul, we touched on TEFCA in the presentation, but can you add more detail on the landscape that preceded TEFCA, along with why your organization put QHIN designation as a focus?
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate being on the chat. First of all, yes, there's a lot of exchange, a lot of interoperability that's been occurring already for the last, you know, decade or two. Commonwealth itself was formed in 2013 by a bunch of competitive, primarily EHR systems that said we need to solve interoperability, do it at scale, and it shouldn't be a single vendor, single institution solution. We really have to think about how to do this across each other. And so Commonwealth was born, and we've had great success, you know, from then. We have about 34,000 clinical sites connected, including, you know, some within home health and others. But there was some confusion. There's Commonwealth eHealth Exchange, there's Care Quality, there's different formats out there. And while you mentioned purposes of use being a significant driver mm-hmm. towards moving towards TEFCA, that is true. Adding payment and operations and the right for individuals to get their data is important. I think one of the major drivers of TEFCA beyond that specificity is creating the final place for everyone to convene and be done. The ONC, the Office of the National Coordinator, which manages, well, actually they changed their name to ASTP, Assistant Secretary for Technology and Policy under the Department of Health and Human Services. They structure the standards under which certified products operate and what the standards would be between everybody. So them forming TEFCA, because they started this network of networks called TEFCA, says we're supporting this as a government thing now, and we expect everybody will like that final destination. Let's start moving everything there. And I did want to key on one thing you said, Chris, which was relative to what's coming next. The one thing you didn't state, which I think is really important, is by bringing the public world, the commercial world, that we've already had good success on doing exchange to the tune of a billion documents every 2 months. So a lot of exchange is going on already. Matching it up with the coordination power of a government entity that does this stuff is really significant. And what you saw recently from ASTP/ONC is an edict from the Department of Health and Human Services that all agencies within HHS are expected to interoperate through TEFCA and adopt FHIR standards so that CMS and CDC and FDA and ONC, like they're all going to be in the same place. So it's not, it merges the world. Government payments, Medicare, Medicaid, and the commercial world merge a lot. That's a lot of the volume what occurs here. And having a good public-private partnership with a good public-private framework enables us to interoperate with each other and then move into new use cases, payment operations, government benefit determination, others as we move forward.
That's a great point, Paul, that the actors participating are more wide-ranging under this federal program than just a provider and includes all these agencies. Now, that's a lot of data moving around. With those purposes of use being well-defined, there's been a lot of debate on the nature of a treatment reason for accessing health data. Nick, I know you're following a lot of the same things. Can you expound a little bit upon some of the discussion and why TEFCA brings a level of trust to the equation that should help drive things forward?
Sure, happy to do, Chris. To build on some of the things Paul discussed in the early days of establishing national networks that would lead to the formation of TEFCA, the first places that we really started were for treatment-based use cases with the idea that your health ought to be portable. If you show up at a doctor's office or in a hospital unconscious or there's a new provider in a home health or hospice arena, your care records ought to be open and accessible for somebody with a need to know based on their need to treat you as a patient. When we talk about expanding some of the purposes of use to payment and operations, to government benefit determination, to these other areas, invites an awful lot of, I think, healthy debate as to what falls into what bucket. And like any area in healthcare or in technology in general, whenever you have rapid evolution of capabilities and open access for the right intentions and right reasons, you're going to have controversy. There's treatment, as all the clinicians on this webinar would understand it, and then some groups have done things that maybe don't always equate to treatment in the eyes of other network participants. And that has been a recent challenge. What I like most about how TEFCA is designed to operate is the ability for stakeholders to come together and solve challenges around these controversies so that everybody has trust, which is inherent in the word, in the acronym for TEFCA, and we can get through disagreements around what constitutes a treatment use case and what really is more of an operations type use case. I think the framework in taking that to a national level instead of each network trying to make its own determination is where some of the magic can happen that continues to build trust at the national level. Paul, you also follow this incredibly closely, so I'd welcome any thoughts you have on that.
You hit the major points. The one thing I will add is to put some specificity around this. Let's limit the participants here to things that we would, without argument, agree are a treatment provider, right? I think the expression we've used many times in the the trust building part of TEFCA. So by the way, TEFCA, Trusted Exchange Framework Common Agreement, the first word is trust. And we're seeing new digital health tools attempting to bend the quality cost curve, which is great. But the regulation of them and the understanding of what they do, we're still having some trouble with. So I think it's interesting from a regulatory perspective that the ONC, which burped out this TEFCA thing, got leveled up to the thing that is also looking at AI in healthcare and how to manage that stuff. I almost slapped myself, don't bring AI into every webinar, but it's important. Is Dr. AI a provider or not? And I think that's an interesting question. We usually tend to think of in the traditional care setting. So you went through the hospitals, ambulatory, and then you get to secondary, tertiary, longer term care stuff, that someone's supervising something. The stethoscope doesn't make a diagnosis. The person listens to the stethoscope and gets a diagnosis, right? And when you start moving into the device, just giving an answer, under what authority is that done to really get the scale we're looking for from technology and interoperability? We have to put these products back in safely and securely. We took a step back, went back to the core, and then we'll start building up from there from those newer tools as we go.
So what I was saying was, those are some fantastic comments. I really want to come back to that if we have some time at the end, but I do want to take a little bit of a break from this policy stuff and, you know, talk about some practical use. And that's why we've got our VIP here, Angela. So Angela, as we talked about, we've been conducting these surveys for the past several years. We show in the last survey, there's a 99% preference for better interoperability for providers sending referrals into post-acute. When you think about some of the actions your organization has taken, how can other organizations look at that number and take advantage of the opportunity in the marketplace?
Being from Maine and covering the regions that we cover, we're a freestanding nonprofit. We don't have an affiliated referral source. We get referrals from a number of ways. I was really excited when Commonwealth came out, and it is to some degree helping meet some needs with our referral partners, but unfortunately it's only as good as what's contributed to it. So we're seeing some data that comes through from hospitals that are vaccinations from 1978. Data is great, but when you're out in the field, boots on the ground, valuable data is holy grail. And the time it takes to get through data that's not helpful is very time consuming, labor intensive. And we're really trying to get our clinical teams the data they need to be able to treat that patient out in the community safely and effectively. We do use Commonwealth. We also use other tools. Maine has a really amazing health information exchange called Health InfoNet, which all the hospitals and all the skilled facilities participate in now. So we're able to get real-time data if we don't get what we need from the referral source. Our referral sources are still coming in the old-fashioned way, like you said, Chris. They're electronic faxes, but they're still faxes that have to be managed. And Referral Connect in Matrix Care helps us do a lot of that management of files and getting into the places that we need it. Ultimately, it needs to be all reviewed and then entered into the Matrix Care system. So when boots on the ground gets to the patient's house, they have a really good med list they can reconcile. And they have very clear ways of knowing what this patient needs. The orders are very clear. Why the patient's seeing us is clear. Although we've come quite a ways, I've been in home health now for 33 years. We still have a ways to go. Does AI offer us opportunities? I think AI is pretty cool. Where does it fit? I don't know. I'd really like to say, let's get it out there to help the people that are doing the care in the communities. There aren't enough of them, and there's more and more patients every day. The speed, effectiveness, and the quality of what we get is really key to the success of anything that we're speaking about today. I don't know if that was insightful or helpful, but that's the truth.
I think you're highlighting something that's really important for people to understand. This isn't a one-size-fits-all solution where everything gets solved by adopting. You had to go approach your different hospitals to set the groundwork to work with them with these same tools in different ways. It's about picking the tools and identifying ways to use them, getting the small win and moving on to the next one. And to that end, you outlined lots of different tools you are using to achieve these goals of building a record, getting the right information to the boots on the ground. Nick, thinking about some of the work you've done in both the ambulatory EHR space as well as for a more recent time in the post-acute space, talk about some of the tools starting to make their way from traditionally acute and ambulatory into this more post-acute space.
Sure. Happy to talk about that. So I think one of the interesting observations based on your prior accurate comments about post-acute care not necessarily having as much of a seat at the table for how the interop roadmap got designed for the country. know, we've had to fend for ourselves a little bit, right? But it's been a nice observation to see that the types of data exchange that were built for workflows in ambulatory and acute are able to be adopted for post-acute care. Some specifics that I'd like to call out would be things like, we can take these documentation packages that we're all used to seeing in post-acute care, and we can leverage the power of the discrete data that's contained within what comes over the networks and leverage that to the advantage of efficient operations, clinical accuracy, and provider satisfaction. A good example there would be, of course, in post-acute, we get 200-page patient summary documents. We have the ability to parse those documents and pull out the relevant information the clinician might be looking for, such as, I just need the updated med list today, right? As we continue to see the infrastructure evolve to support more and more discrete data exchange, the plan for all post-acute providers should be to take advantage of those and make sure the technology platforms that they use are taking advantage of those evolutions so that we can see some of the benefits of being able to pull the information that we need on patients at the right time and in the right place and in a workflow that's aligned for the providers. Because we all know that even if that's a 200-page fax document and delivered it to them, nobody's going to read that because they don't have the time. It'd be easier to make a phone call. Additionally, some of the push-type exchanges for delivering provider notifications, we all know that in post-acute, patients even under episodic care, they have encounters with dozens of community physicians or other care providers during the course of their treatment, and being able to get updates if a physician adjusts the patient's med list or if a patient takes an ambulance ride in the middle of the night, being able to get information in a timely fashion allows them to propose the correct care interventions, work with that patient on a new medication regimen, whatever the case may be, bring those technologies that have been a little bit more available maybe in acute and ambulatory and leverage them in specific post-acute care workflows. I think that's a really powerful evolution for the industry.
Thanks, Nick. Angela, quick question. How many faxes do you think you have coming into your system today?
Oh, thousands. We have multiple programs, the back and forth and faxes, even faxes with orders coming in. I think we're at like 6,000 on a monthly basis. Those are just orders. That's not even referrals. Referrals is a separate entity all of itself. So it's a tremendous amount of faxes.
And I'm going to use that one point because I knew she was going to say that. I'm going to use that as a jump into the next question here. So we've had all these leaps forward. We had Paul and Nick here talking about the previous history and now TEFCA and all the changes that's bringing into a larger marketplace. But we've also talked a little bit about how post-acute care is often left behind from some of these equations. I think Angela's fax count is a good example of that. Despite having these landmark pieces of legislation, why do we think transitions of care and basic record building for post-acute care and coordination, getting notifications back from a hospital when a patient admits in the middle of the night, continue to elude wide-scale solutions in the post-acute space? And I'm going to direct that question to everybody in turn, but I'm going to start with Paul, since we haven't heard from Paul in a bit.
Actually, I have a second question, Angela. Let me ask, how long have you been connected to Interop and Commonwealth?
It's been probably 6 years, maybe 8 years. We first implemented it, and one of our larger referral providers actually contributed data that was helpful, but they also were the referral source that also had given us access directly to their EHR. So the urgency around that was limited because we were getting direct information right off from the EHR. The one that was more complicated that we were really hopeful about was an Epic-driven healthcare system. And the data that they were providing us was minimal, demographics and old data, and worked really diligently. They're a large provider in Maine to try to help get better information, but unfortunately was not able to really get anything more. They contribute what they want to contribute. They don't have to contribute any more than that. So with them, they didn't see value added to contribute more to Commonwealth. So they just continue with the process we have with them now, which is electronically transmitting the referrals to us.
Yeah, the reason why I asked the question is, I think the word you're looking for, Chris, it's not a panacea. It's not going to solve everything. And I think we have to recognize that Interop is being built, but the specific workflows you want may not be as apparent. The big thing that's changed from 6 years ago to now is the number of things connected. If you had asked me 6 years ago, this predates my employment at Commonwealth, but I was very much an Interop Billy at the time, the likelihood of an individual data source being available to you was a, let's say, a crapshoot, right? But it's probably a 25% chance that thing was going to be on the network. Now, I'd say that's more like 80% of the data is available through interoperability networks. So Commonwealth, the things we connect to as frameworks, that being Care Quality and TEFCA. Some of the workflows that are specific to post-acute aren't quite what you expect, although in home health, you're a little bit better off than some of the things that have an ambulance showing up the door. And the main thing that's missing, what's real-time needs and what is okay to get later? A lot of these stuff was set up with data sources publishing information after some trigger. So at 2 o'clock in the morning, the EHR at the hospital does a batch job that collects all the discharges that happened before midnight the day before and creates a set of documents. But the person got discharged at 11:15 p.m. in an ambulance and shows up at some post-acute facility, that document has not been produced yet. It just doesn't exist. So the unfortunate reality is you had to get push. Now, there are push methods of interoperability, but the facts still work. So we went to the thing we knew worked before we could start advancing to new workflows. What query-based exchange, and that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about things that are connected that will share data with anyone plugging in, tend to work best for one to many. I don't know if this hospital needs to talk to this post-acute or to that provider, whatever it is, but it's available if I need it. But there is a fair amount of things that you want directly pushed at you. The standards are changing to be more direct database, direct to the EHR core calls. And that's a replacement of the way we do things today. And that's not there right now. We have somewhere near 2% adoption of the thing called FHIR, F-H-I-R. Mm-hmm. If you hear that term, all you need to understand FHIR versus these document blobs, as Angela pointed out, probably a multi-screen list of encounter, progress note, discharge summary, all this stuff. And you're just trying to find the reconciled medications post-discharge. That's all you're looking for. It's in a document 422. It's hard to find. When we move towards FHIR, which is about discrete data elements, the system for MatrixCare, ResMed, whatever, can say, give me the labs and the medications from yesterday. That's all I want to know. Thank you very much. That creates a whole set of workflows. It's important as you go out there and think about what Interop can do. One, see what kind of coverage you have in your neighborhood, because your local connections matter more than something 300 miles away. That's not going to help you much. And two, look at the data and figure out what are the standard things from those trading partners that you can use regularly. Unfortunately, the rest of the workflows are going to require some creativity, whether it be direct or fax and whatever, until we get to simpler usage at the front. I do apologize, Angela. You're 100% not wrong, right? The data is voluminous. This is a fire hose. And not only is it a fire hose, it's a lot of duplicated data. My procedures, allergies, medications are in about 17 different EHRs, and you get them all at the same time, copied over and over again. If I were to make a recommendation, is, you know, make sure you have coverage in your neighborhood and focus on the most recent stuff. Ignore older stuff because it's duplicative of what's recent. Pull what you need and start building workflows from there. I would be careful about dreaming up workflows and hoping the data is there to do what you want to do.
No, we've got it narrowed down. I'm just saying it would be very nice if the key elements that we need were always present and available immediately when a referral comes in. That's like the holy dream of every home health or hospice or any kind of an agency. We just want to know what are the current meds, what's the current diagnosis, what are the orders, and any up-to-date things that we need to be aware of might be social determinants that we may need to know because we're going out in the community. So those are elements that are important to us as well. But as you said, it's buried in this document, which it's, oh, you can give us all the data you want to give us, but if it's not in a format, it's really not useful. Yeah, we will continue to move forward. We're a resilient post-acute crew, so don't worry about us. But anything you can do to make it better will always be appreciated. I have to say, though, HIE has really taken it to another level. I think our state has really taken it to a level that we can depend on if we can't find anything else. So that's been key for us.
Yeah, the one thing I'll just add to that, if you don't mind, Chris, we just came out of COVID and we saw how much health information exchange or health information networks were facilitating data exchange and collaboration when people had no way of going into a practice anymore. There wasn't a person to put the paper into the fax machine. So the fax machine actually was a little quieter than usual. One of the key workflows we saw increase in Commonwealth was patients trying to get access to their data. Because the first thing that got closed during COVID at the hospital was the HRM. They were non-essential employees. Like the person that just filed documents and did faxes without access to their stuff, they couldn't put it in a fax machine. So we saw a lot of patients trying to get onto personal health records to get access for their data. Healthcare is also a lot of administrative transactions. They weren't getting it because they're interested in their data. They had a life insurance claim they were making. They had a disability claim. They were trying to do all the paperwork stuff that requires clinical data. I strongly recommend you think about those workflows in addition to the treatment workflows, because they're the things that bog you down and don't let you do what you really want to do, which is have the resources to get the right clinicians to do their jobs.
That's a great point, Paul. Before I direct the question to Nick, I want to plug the Post-Acute Interoperability Working Group, or PASIO.org, for anyone interested in taking a look, where to the point that Paul made and Angela reinforced, that it'd be great if we just had a snapshot of everything that a post-acute provider needs, and that was what was published, and not the broader deluge of information or fire hose, as Paul said. That entity, with partners such as myself and others in the industry, are working toward that exact kind of document. But to the original question, that's not in the Cures Act, and there is no indication that there's going to be a particular law covering that kind of thing. What are your thoughts? What's been holding up some meaningful use cases being solved in healthcare that is being eyed as a lower cost place to start putting seriously ill patients with the advancements of technology?
Great question. I think a good place to start is actually a little bit with what you interjected there, Chris. First of all, I think you've done a really good job helping the effort for some of this change with PASIO. I would encourage any provider that wants to find a way to get involved to make their voice heard. That organization is actually sponsored by CMS, and it is designed to take use cases specific to post-acute care and put them in a format that is compatible with the rules that govern certified EHRs and acute and ambulatory. Before we can get things pushed almost past this type of data along with a referral or make it accessible, most of the vendors that we work with on the referral source side of things, your health system vendors like Epic and Cerner and Meditech, and your ambulatory vendors like Athena, Greenway, ECW, you name it, they're interop departments. We want to do the right thing. They are in that line of work for the passion of healthcare and being able to solve for these specific type of use cases. Anybody who's part of the national interoperability landscape has examples where care gaps cause serious illness or even death because healthcare data did not follow the patient or treatment was not administered appropriately because nobody knew the background of that patient's case. Making sure your voice is heard and leveraging the power of groups like PASIO and TikTok, an affiliate of NOC, that stands for the Home Care Technology Association of America. And the work that these organizations do can't be overstated. They're great opportunities to get engaged with policy influencers and policy makers for making sure that these use cases that meet the specific needs of care providers are met. From the vendor perspective, one of the reasons CARE joined Commonwealth in the first place was for the ability to sit down in a room full of vendors and talk about these things. In the original definitions around having a relationship with the patient that would enable a treatment-based use case, the workflow of a home health or hospice nurse driving out to a patient's home for their first encounter, that was typically where the rubber met the road. You can now verify this patient's identity. This is a perfect example. This actually happened in 2014 or 2015. We had some folks who were very passionate about leading the charge for changing the way that was viewed and proposed use cases within Commonwealth to say, if we get a referral message that positively identifies that patient, we don't necessarily need to see a driver's license or a passport and verify their photo. We can link the healthcare information received in a referral transaction, make sure that from a technology perspective, it matches the patient identity between both the referral system and the home healthcare system, and establish a positive link. The provider can get a download of their medication list before they ever hop in their car, and God forbid that saves them from happen to spend a few hours on the phone calling around and asking what in the shoebox full of medications is actually relevant. Your own voice can be the best thing, even just talking to your vendors and say, hey, we love feature XYZ, but it'd be really nice if we could do this advanced use case. we on the vendor community definitely look at it as our responsibility to handle that, not ask our customers to solve the healthcare interoperability challenges themselves. I'm very fond of saying interoperability is a team sport, and we should treat it as such. Leverage your teammates, follow your blockers.
Awesome. Thanks, Nick. All right. Next audience question is, how would my organization participate in TEFCA? I think this is open-ended for whoever wants to jump in first, but a lot of that is contingent on the software technology you're using.
The key thing there, generally, TEFCA-based services are designed to be transparent to end users. It's usually through your vendor. Think of your mobile phone. You don't think about whether someone's on T-Mobile or Verizon or AT&T. You just have a phone number and you dial it, right? You're getting your services from Verizon. I'm getting mine from AT&T. Good to know. But behind that is a switch infrastructure and a federal governance infrastructure that talks about doling out phone numbers, making sure we don't have collisions, and making sure we can route back and forth. So you're most likely going to receive the on-ramp onto TEFCA through a product. That does not mean that someone could not, you know, sign up directly. It's just, it's a relatively large lift. Just from a general structure perspective, TEFCA is an overarching governance framework. It's not actually much of a technology thing. And it invites supernodes, like these things called QHINs, entities that know how to run this governance and have multiple vendors and products behind it to on-ramp onto this framework and then connect to each other. So right now there are 7 supernodes. There's 2 in the wings right now looking to connect as well. We expect to have a couple more. If it starts getting above, say, 15, 20, it's actually good to consolidate this. There's a lot of security, a lot of regulatory requirements and paperwork, a lot of stuff you got to do to manage just the core thing. But you're likely going to on-ramp through your primary product. And they can come in through multiple angles. They could be through Commonwealth. They could be through one of the other QHINs. But for the most part, the idea is that the on-ramps are equalized in the data they can get. And the functionality inside, that can change, right? So I may operate differently as AT&T than Verizon, but on the outside, they look the same.
All right. I think we've got just a couple more minutes left. I think best thing to do right now, pending any other questions coming in while we're talking, is any closing thoughts or comments from everybody around TEFCA, around interoperability and post-acute care?
I think interoperability is key to us being successful. It's going to increase efficiencies and optimize what's being provided in the community. It's going to be a safe way to make sure care is being delivered and is accurate with the data that we need. We've seen progress over the past 10 years, and we are getting there, but I think post-acute is always last on the list. The unfortunate part happening now is that CMS has been strong with home health on cutbacks. So we are trying to optimize and become as efficient as possible. Anything that can be done to assure that our clinicians are able to see the patients they need to see and they have what they need is key to success for organizations to continue providing care and for that care to be safe and good quality. I participate in different groups. I'm on the 360 project, which is working on elements necessary when a patient is discharged from the hospital. It's been a very interesting group to be part of. I'd encourage others, if they want to get involved with the PACIO project, to definitely, our voices need to be heard. I think the understanding of how we function very differently than an acute setting, even a skilled facility. We get lumped in with skilled facilities, and we don't really function like skilled facilities out here in home health. We have very different needs. It's a very different world. I remain optimistic. I'm very excited about what AI can do. A little bit scared, but also very optimistic. The future looks bright. It's the way we need to go in order to be sustainable.
Great answer. Thanks, Angela. Go ahead.
I'll build on what Angela said. I think if there's one thing that audience members can take away from interoperability discussions during the age of TEFCA is get engaged now. You can be successful. The survey data that was collected is very decisive. Referral sources are looking for more from their post-acute care delivery partners. And it all starts with the conversation with your referral sources, with other community physicians, with groups that you need to work with on a day-to-day basis. And then the second conversation you should definitely be having is with your technology partner. This is a fast evolving area now. And it is of paramount importance for everybody to get engaged and connected. Your technology vendors ought to be in a position to help you. So please do lean on them. Please come to us with questions and opportunities to collaborate, not just to get you connected, but also to continue to iterate. Interoperability is a journey too. It's not done just because PEFCO is here. There's more work to be done, and by participating, you can better influence your future and the future of how we think about healthcare interoperability in the post-acute care domains.
Thanks, Nick. And the last word from Paul.
I didn't prepare a closing statement, so I have to make it up. First of all, thank you, everyone. I reiterate a little bit of what was said in terms of connect or get engaged now, start that journey. The thing I said before, I'll reiterate, a lot is already connected. You're not a trailblazer at this point. The first mover disadvantage of jumping into this, the deep end first, people have already done. Does that mean that the work is done? Not even close. The only way we finish that job, actually, it's a never finished job. It's like going into a living, breathing city and saying the buildings today are what's going to be there in 5 years. It's going to change. The skyline is going to change over time. Things will shift. But if you're not there, your voice is definitely not heard. And I understand how when you get there, you're like, I wish things worked better. We don't know what's not working. If you're not there for us to see how we can help. A couple of things I think are important to keep in mind as you get here, especially as you share data back. I think it's important that you do that and think about patient access to their data. The ultimate care navigator is myself. The ultimate care navigator for my mother is probably my sister now. But we do the best we can. Patients need the data to make informed decisions. The data you produce is more important than you probably realize. As you go forward into sharing, look at your own data. One of the biggest errors I've seen in interoperability is people having no idea how bad the output of their data really is because they're not users of it. You request data out of a system and a blob comes out. Sometimes that blob doesn't have what you would expect it to have. So once in a while, ask people, am I being a good exchanger? Am I being reciprocal? What am I missing from my data that would help you? That's when you can start that conversation about, I would like this, I would like this. It'd be nice if this document had this stuff up top. And you find out the community starts to build a better workflow together when you admit that maybe you're not doing perfect and they'll admit they aren't as well. And things tend to rise up from there.
That's a great point, Paul. And I will stop it there with just the general call to reach out to your tech partners, your hospital provider partners, and anyone else, and start building these connections. Thanks. I'll turn it back over to Andrew for closing.
All right. Thank you. Wonderful discussion. And thank you, Angela, Paul, Nick, and Chris. Again, wonderful discussion. Everyone have a great week.
That concludes the latest episode of the Post Acute Point of View podcast. We have a lot of guests and topics coming up that you won't want to miss, so be sure to subscribe. To learn more about Matrix Care and our solutions and services, visit matrixcare.com. You can also follow us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook. Thank you for listening. Be well, and we'll see you next time.